Hello and welcome to ILC Home Claims Week. In 2020, we're holding a virtual conference as opposed to a physical one, but let's all hope that we're back meeting with each other next November. First of all, I want to say thanks. We've had lots of interest in the support we've been able to provide through 2020. And of course, 2020 is indeed the theme of the Home Claims Week. We're going to look at how we adapted, what we learned, and what we're going to change. And I think it's fair to say that the home claims world has risen to the many, many challenges that we've been set through 2020. And we're looking forward to a great week, webinars and podcasts, where we're going to look at how we understand each other's businesses, how we collaborated and worked together, how we looked at cost and pricing, and it might help us move forward, tech and the process, alternative accommodation, subsidence, and of course, contractors and building claims. But I guess the biggest thank goes to our sponsors and corporate partners, without whom we wouldn't really be able to do this. Headline sponsor of Claims Consortium Group, so thanks to Jeremy and the team. Other sponsors are Service Certainty, Sedgwick's, Coraventa, Safeline, GeoBear, SCI, and of course our corporate partners, Carpenters, CoreLogic, SiteCall, Innovation Group, iCab and Synergy. If you're interested in having a commercial relationship with I Love Claims, contact either myself or my colleague Nick Sproul. Anyway, the biggest thanks is to you. Throughout the year, you tuned in to our 20-odd webinars, which we hope have really helped us through some difficult times. And of course, we're not out of the woods yet, so we will continue to support you by hoping that we can be better tomorrow from what we learned today. Anyway, without any further delay, let's get on with this session. Hello and welcome to this morning's podcast, which is the last podcast of the week. And of course, we still have got a great webinar in store for you this afternoon. And this podcast, we're going to look back at what's happened in 2020, some of the things that have arisen during the week. And I'm delighted to say three very good panellists to get that from a wide-ranging background. Jeremy Hyams is from Claims Consortium, and for the 6th year in a row is the main sponsor of our conference, even though it's a very different conference this year. So delighted to have Jeremy. Another of our frequent sponsors and partners is Safeline, Steve Kennedy, another frequent ILC and golf stalwart. Pleased to have you. And for the first time, Matthew Parker from Procurator. Pleased to have you on, Matthew, as well, to give us some fresh views. But of course, you've been involved in the insurance industry yourself through various insurers for a high number of years. It's great to have you on board. We've had a great week. We look back at 2020, adapting, learning and changing, which is, of course, the process we've gone through. We adapted fantastically, I think I said in a few things. The claim deserves a lot of credit for what it was able to do almost overnight back in March. And I stand by my theory that if I had suggested that you could do that to all of you back in January, you'd have laughed at me. I'd have laughed at myself, so I'd never have said it. So there you go. But we're going to go through some of the big movements that we've had and things we can hopefully go forward. But first of all, although we were revealing graphs in this afternoon's webinar, the results are 5 main questions of a survey. I'm going to reveal them now. So the first question, we'll get some reactions from the guys. The first question was, which of the following is the biggest challenge facing insurers? Cost of claims come in at 21%. The customer journey, bear this in mind, come in at nearly 56%. Using automation correctly, come in at just under 12%, as did the global recession and Brexit. I'm not sure why we put that one in there, but we did. But nonetheless, by far in that one, customer journey was important. So we then went off to say, right, which of the following is the biggest challenge facing suppliers? Now, this was a pretty even response, 29 down to 21%. Forecasting demand, not surprisingly, 29%. That's a difficult thing for everybody, insurers, suppliers, everything. Pricing cost, 27%. Cash flow, 23%. Now, I imagine if I had asked that question in April or May, I would imagine cash flow would have been much higher. But that may be testament to the industry's ability to get together, collaborate, and make sure that good. And claims process was lowest in this one at 21%. So then we run Do you think suppliers are aligned to insurers' business priorities? Yes, 50%. No, 42%. Now let me take you to the one that I think shocks me a little bit, but maybe with the balance of people who have answered it. Do you think insurers really understand suppliers' business priorities? Yes was only 25%, and no was 75%. Priorities between the two. Given the way insurers have reached out this year, that was a bit of a surprise to me. And then the last thing, what would help communication and service the most? Digitalization, 15%. Trust comes up a lot, 25%. Clearer guidelines, under 2%. That was a bit surprising, I thought, but that's only my opinion. Simplified process, 58%. Worth remembering all that. So, let's go around and get a reaction to that and see what happens. So, let's start with Jeremy. What was your reaction to any of these? Bearing in mind, with my waiver, that these are not scientific, statistically balanced surveys. They're just surveys of our colleagues.
So, I think the starting place would be if we looked back at topical conversations this week, it's all about being about data, right? And it's been about ensuring we have good, healthy, clean data. So my first question would be about the source and about whether that data is coming from a good abundance of different parts of the ecosystem. So like you say, it's... I suppose just a little bit of fun. But the thing that stands out for me is really about, and I mentioned this when I was on the other day, is about the client, about the insurer and the supplier. I fundamentally believe that the biggest challenge between the industry is the fact that the supplier and the insurer are diametrically opposed at the beginning to what they want. You know, as a supplier, I want loads of claims, you know, and that's good for my business. As an insurer, that's the worst thing for a business. And the very fact the starting ground is that, how can you ever be on kilt, right? And that's where the distrust and sort of lack of transparency creeps in. Nail that answer to solve that problem, and you nail a whole lot of stuff. I'm working on the answer, as I mentioned before, in my digital innovation hub, in my business. And, we want to come out with an answer, but that's for me the biggest challenge of the industry.
I'd just like to point out though, everyone did it in that survey did have to know how to be on a computer and do the link. Some sort of digital advancement in it. If I got to the link the first time. Okay, Steve, over to you. You've heard these results. Any of them surprise you? Would you disagree with any of them?
No, not really. Do you think the insurers really understand suppliers' business priorities? I think, like Jeremy said, I think that's pretty much bang on. But I say, you've said that you kind of were surprised at that. This year's changed. This year's changed a lot of things for a lot of people and in the industry. I personally think the industry's come together like never before. And I think so much uncertainty out there for everybody, I think, from supplier to insurer, loss adjusters. I think we've all tightened up. And I think the unknown scared us a lot. And so I personally think it's the process for a lot of it's improved for us little Safe Life Environmental. I find it a lot easier to talk to insurers, loss adjusters, to get a hold of people basically. I do think there's still an element of too many people involved in a claim. We're not too bad. We're a one stop shop. We get an instruction through, phone the policyholder, out we go, liaise with a contractor. So it's not too bad, but I do think it still can be simplified. Jeremy's led the way with a lot of the technology. We work with Jeremy. That's been a good process. A bit more, less people in the claim. would help dramatically for the customer journey. But it all adds up to the customer journey in question one. All of this is relevant. But overall, I think it's been easier this year to, it hasn't been easy for a lot of people, but in general, to get a hold of people, to talk to people. And I think the insurers are listening more now than they have. I think, and that comes down to basically the unknown and the uncertainty that we've all been through the past 9 months.
Yeah. I think that's fair. Just for all those that are listening and can't see that, we're doing this in Zoom so we can see each other, but obviously it's only going to be audio when it goes out. So when Steve talks about Safeline and exposes the badge in his shirt, I just thought I'd point out he'd done that.
I'm visually.
Yeah, it's very, very impressive. He looks as if he's been to the gym. Not sure what year he went, but there you go. Right, Matthew, moving on to you. You've seen the answers. Oh, sorry, you've heard the answers that have come through that. When you're looking, I mean, Jeremy and Steve both made the point of saying, right, okay, the issue here, you know, people who want claims and people who don't want claims in the process, if we take it down to its barest knuckle, I guess. If you'd got to check procurement, buying whatever you want across the process, yeah, and tie things in together, what do these results tell you, the challenge that might be there for people like yourselves?
That's a good question. So I think if you look at the customer journey and the results there, this problem's been going on for, you know, a long time around, you know, the customer journeys, not where insurance companies want it to be and not where the policyholders want it to be. And I think for me, there needs to be a shift in the way insurance companies and that supply chain work. And you know, from a procurement angle, where, you know, I've spent most of my career and where we concentrate at Procurato is looking across rather than just, you know, doing a contract for, you know, or a project around restoration or a project around building, but to look at how that whole end-to-end works. And I think from my perspective, it's not a simple answer, and you can't just fix it with technology, you can't just fix it with good data or MI, you can't just fix it with good collaborative working. It's a whole system of things. There's no magic bullet out there. And I think this is why, you know, this problem's been around for so long. And I think for me, if I look now at the, you know, the much better integration in terms of better use of technology and people working together a lot more between insurance company and the supply chain, I think there's a building platform now to really start changing the way the supply chain and insurance companies work, not just but during COVID, but how do you take that and build on it by doing different things and working differently together?
Yeah. Interesting, isn't it? We're going to learn as we go on about, you know, procurement and new different techniques, and I'm not sure insurers always lead the way with that in the past. We may be moving to more horizontal method now. Jeremy, we've talked a lot about technology this week, and we did have that great phrase earlier in the week that we've moved 15 years in 3 months. I think I asked if that was 15 years of catch-up rather than going ahead. Where are we with tech? We've seen a much improved use through necessity this year. Where really are we with digitalisation and its effect on the customer and the whole process?
I think like the event that you've put on this week, I think it's really, there's been a few really good wins. And I think the obvious wins are the adaptation of video technology. You've talked about that a lot. And I think that, you know, from our own business, we saw the customers taking that up in droves, and we saw really significantly, and this is the exciting bit, that wasn't a surprise, but what was quite a surprise was how fast insurers were quick to respond to new processes, due diligence, pricing, and they really nailed that incredibly fast. So for me, the surprise wasn't so much around the technology, because that is a bit, you know, it's kind of been there, and actually so many businesses, so many other industries are doing it, have been doing it for years. Like you say, it's kind of a bit old hat, but actually, you know what? It was very good. And it was the the impressive ways that insurers have been sort of adapting to that. I think beyond that, there is a whole swathe of kind of technology going on that isn't necessarily clear to the customer, but there are things happening and technologies being invested in and played with and trialed that basically it absolutely improve that customer journey to the point that sort of really sort of drilling down to the point that Steve and Matthew have both talked about, which is the too many people in the process and the sort of like over, the whole overcomplication process. So there is a place for technology that I've started to see, which really simplifies the process, right? So the digitalization can help simplify the process, make it much more lean, and actually make it much more effective, much more customer-centric. And obviously, if it's more customer-centric and it's more efficient, it's going to be a much cheaper process for the insurer. But one of the things that you know, I think we've touched on before, and something that, again, I feel really passionate about, and you know, technology is a thing that is really close to my heart and something that we've invested a lot of money in. Technology alone, it isn't the thing that just solves great service. Yeah. You need people. And I think it's what you were saying, Matthew, technology isn't the one answer. There's a whole plethora of different things, but you need people in businesses. And certainly a lot of the guys that you've been interviewing and like, you know, Steve, I know very well, as you said, he does work for us. It's kind of companies like Steve and the way they treat their people. And it's the way the industry, and I've seen this, I think a lot, I've seen that hugely over the last couple of years. The companies involved in the industry have really taken that to heart, and so many of them, like ourselves, like our supply chain, are really passionate about their people, and their people are the single biggest thing that makes a difference to the service to the customer. And actually, great technology, all that does is it just shows up the service. So if you offer really poor service and the people don't really care about the customer, all the great technology is going to do is go, whoa, look how bad we are. Equally, if you've got really great people that are really sort of proud to work for you and take pride in their work, then the technology is going to shine you know, make you look phenomenal. So I've probably gone off drift with your question a little bit, but yeah, that's good.
We you know that's what I do, right? Own questions around here. Where would you ever get that impression from? Stephen, we have talked about a number of people in the process, and we go back to repeat myself. We've seen some great improvements this year. I'm also aware that within these great improvements, there has been a far more understanding and end customer in all of this. So therefore, by and large, the patience of the end user has been excellent because they're nervous and scared and worried and being cautious like the rest of us. If that goes back to normal, and I'm sure it isn't a flick of a switch, then it goes back to normal, how can we make sure that the gauge you've talked about in terms of everybody communicating together stay there? Because what I perceive is not only might some people resort to where we were before, understandably, but the pressure from the customer will be greater, there'll be a greater throughput of claims, and people will return to being perhaps more demanding than they have been by and large through this year.
I think these forums are set up, you know, we could set up forums between the insurance company and suppliers, regular sort of dialogue, more dialogue between the claims management companies, the insurers, the suppliers, which I think, you know, through ILC, through all that we're doing here, Al, has definitely helped. I mean, it's good that I can talk to Jeremy and Matt and stuff like that, relaxed atmosphere and bounce off each other. You know, over the past, what you guys have introduced, Al, over the past 7 or 8 years has been great for, you know, confidence, for people to get to know each other at all different levels, whether you're insurer, whether you're claims management. You know, you walk around the ILC in November and there's so many people in the industry, and it's great to get to know people and just build in relationships up. But that's your question. I basically think it's stay the way we are, better communication, lines of communication, but also, you know, monthly forums with the insurer, with the claims manager, you know, with the suppliers, just to see how things are going. I think we always have, we have these reviews you do with the insurer, the claims once a year, but I think better dialogue between everybody, and you know, be a bit of pressure on everybody when things get back to normal. But hopefully everything doesn't drift apart, because I think a lot of things have come together over the past 9 months. As I said before, just the unknown has brought people together. One of our big clients, we undertook fortnightly forums in March, April, and May, and that was great for us all. All the suppliers were on, and we were bounced off each other about materials. How can we do this? The demand, you know, could we go to a policyholder's home, and is there moral, you know, stance there, and all sorts. But again, it all came down to talking to each other, bouncing off each other. And I think going forward, just better lines of communication and people being there for, you know, people on the end of the phone for you if you need an answer to anything. I mean, our guys make so many phone calls and people ignoring it. Just lift the phone, help each other out. You know, we all have to get this claim done one way or the other. And I definitely think better lines of communication, and I think that's happened over the past 8 or 9 months without a shadow of a doubt. People have been there. Whether or not they're working from home's easier or whatever, and in an office environment, you can get a lot of distraction in an office environment, where you know I think people seem to be more efficient working from home in that respect. So I don't know what Jeremy. I mean, Jeremy, you guys have not, you're not quite back yet, are you? You're still working from home as such.
I'd say it's probably about 30% back. So some departments were back. Other departments are working from home. Some areas that they're easy, it's easier to work from home, and others want to be in the office.
How did you find initially operating everybody from home? How getting them operational from home was.
I mean, listen, my hand goes out to our tech team, our IT team. I mean, you know, we kind of, as most people, sort of foresaw this happening. And so we were pre-planning this for about 10 days beforehand. And then my IT team, I'm saying to them, oh my God, this is going to happen. Right, we just need to get everyone out now. And like, they just start doing it. And then my tech director's going, look, Jeremy, please stop. Let me deal with this. I've got it under control. And he really controlled me. I was kind of in his ear all the time. And he was like, no, and we're doing it this way. And he did it very calmly, got all the ducks in his order, got all the inventory done, got all the processes done, got all the technology ready. So at the point when we could press the button, we evacuated everyone seamlessly.
It was a terrific achievement throughout the industry.
It was a terrific achievement in my business. No thanks to me. I trust you. I was just go.
If there was a whole load of like it, thumbs going up just now, I tell you. Matthew, over to this. So we've heard some amazing things that have happened in insurance this year. So we can make the process better. We can semi-automate it while still maintaining the customer service and people that calls there. We've seen flexibility in cost and price. We've seen people working together. Does that really mean that from a procurement angle, we can look across the process, make these gains, and begin to have an overall impact on a more efficient, both cost and effective cost of claim? Is that the right route to go down rather than just one particular avenue?
I think so, definitely. And the work we've been doing with some insurance companies, I think there's definitely a thought there to go that route. So rather than look at an individual area, to start looking across and how they work differently. And I feel there's a tidal change about to come if the momentum stays. I think a lot of insurance companies are realizing that, you know, keep doing the same thing keeps getting the same results. So they want to do things differently. They want to change the journey. And if we just like look at, you know, some work we're doing now on Escape of Water and the way insurance companies are, you know, beginning to look at that differently. And we're arguing that, you know, you need to take a holistic view here and not just look at one area of how you manage that particular problem, but accept that that's a problem. And how do you best manage it? So I think there's definitely a shift to be had. And I can see some green shoots in that area.
Jeremy, people can't see it. You were nodding your head there that we can't, if we keep doing the same things, we can't change. But we have seen a change these months. How? What do you think we have to do to make sure that when things begin to go back to normal, let's we can keep that momentum at a reasonable pace. I'm not saying it'll stay at the same pace.
Yeah.
It would be difficult without the necessity.
So before I answer that question, the reason why I was shaking my head to what Matthew was saying is I feel like I'm always saying that exactly what you just said. And I'm saying to insurers, look, if you're not happy with your existing service, your existing indemnity spend, and you want to improve it, you're only ever going to improve it a little bit better by having, you know, sort of swapping your suppliers around and keeping the same process and doing an RFP that is the same as what you've always done. Sure, you might get better suppliers, you might get a better price and blah, blah, but ultimately you're only ever going to improve it ever so slightly. If you want to exponentially increase that service and exponentially reduce fees and get closer to the customer with your philosophies and absolutely nail indemnity spend with no leakage, you have to do something different, because you just doesn't, just, oh, doing the same thing with the same process is just not going to generate anything different. That's why I was nodding my head, because it's exactly what I think. But in terms of sort of going forward, I think there's, as everyone said, there's been some great traction. And I think that, you know, the buy-in from what we're seeing at the moment is some real buy-in from insurers, either on a very deep level to get to be really transparent with their strategy, and sharing that with us, to allowing us to help build processes and systems to align with their long-term strategy, which means that we're completely aligned with them. But on a higher level, we've seen insurers want to try stuff, wacky stuff that I'm always coming up with, and everyone kind of thinks I'm the crazy CEO that sort of should stay in the attic. But actually, they're listening to some of this stuff now, and they're trying it out, and they're not scared of failing. They're kind of like, yeah, let's give this a go. I think what you'll find is that momentum will happen. I think the momentum will carry on, because I think this is long term, right? This has been 9 months and we're not about to get out of this anytime soon. So we will still be in some sort of weird world, in my opinion, in 9 months' time. So the longevity of this would have kicked in. And by that time, you're going to have some smart businesses that have been born out of this pandemic that will just potentially disrupt my services and everyone else's here and make us all irrelevant, right? There will be some really new starters, okay, coming in. And equally, there will be people that, businesses that have repurposed, reinvested, and will be like new starters coming in, disrupting. So with all that change, there has no choice. There has to be, you know, change going forward. And I think insurers will adapt because of that tidal wave. But also, there is over the horizon, and it is a slower thing. But if you see, you know, a lot of what, you know, you look at someone like Munich Re, or a Swiss Re, and you look at stuff that's going over across the pond, there is some really, really interesting digital innovations, insurtech stuff happening, right? That is a real challenge, and it will be a real challenge to the insurance market over here. So I think that you're going to find that insurers will feel that pressure from those other insurtech companies, and that in itself will help keep that momentum, I think.
And you know, hopefully what this year's shown is that the insurance companies and the suppliers in the industry can move really quickly, perhaps quicker than we thought before, and react to that.
Yeah.
Front end of all of this change and the stuff that's goes through, and something that has to get places really quickly, and probably at the past can be frustrated at the amount of time it gets to get an instruction to you. While the claims process may have slowed up a little bit through availability of the policyholder, have you seen a sharper communication to get you to site right time with the right information?
Sorry, I'll
You just broke up.
Let me try that again. What I was trying to say was whether or not all the innovation we've seen this year, the speed of movement, despite the fact that the policyholders are a bit more cautious, is it helping you get the right information and get to site at the right time with the right information, perhaps more than the process?
Without a shadow of a doubt. Some of the information we get from contractors and stuff is just, it's no good, basically. You end up spending, another hour on the phone trying to get, the right information. So all the systems are set up. We've got Synergy, we've got Exactware, we've got, Jeremy, I forget what system you...
You mentioned it, Synergy. That's good.
Exactly. But it's all set up to sort of help out. But we keep finding that there is still a lack of information on there right from the start, which comes from the claims handler or whatever. But I just want to pick up what Jeremy says. I'll go off on tangent about the technology side of things. Jeremy, I mean, it's obvious we still have a generation out there that don't really, want to move in that direction. Whether we'll have the generation for that much longer, I'm not quite sure. but you still have to push. You still have to push, and it will come. The technology, all these ideas, they're great, and it will happen. But what I'm saying is, you're still finding you've got a guard out there of a generation who just still want to pick up the phone.
Are you talking about customers?
Yeah,
policy. Oh, yeah, no, completely. And I think technology, sort of. There is technology for customers and there's technology to have a far better efficient process. So I think it's really important that the technology, the way we communicate with customers has to be in a way, cannot be prescriptive, right? It cannot be, you need to WhatsApp me, you need to message me, you need to email me. The thing is you need, businesses these days need a true omni-channel service. So if someone wants to message you through social media, great. If someone wants to pick the phone up to you, if someone wants to write to you, there needs to be a process where they can start on one way and finish on the other.
Yeah.
So absolutely. The digitalization for customers is just having the right channels for them to communicate with you. But don't let that underestimate the digitalization of the claims process, where you take out those inefficiencies, where you increase transparency between all of these many, many players in the process. Once you do that, that can only happen through digitalization, in my opinion. And once you do that, the knock-on effect is it doesn't matter whether a customer is totally forward-thinking from a technology perspective or as someone who just likes to pen and paper, the service they'll end up receiving will be phenomenally better. And it's not because they're having a digital interaction. It's because the foundations of the services is based that way.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt both things are required. Of course, we've heard from Ian at Saga quite a lot, the huge take-up of at least initial video technology in the SAG age, which surprised them a little, but I think it probably doesn't if you ask Amazon, there's a high shopping thing in there. So, yeah, I don't think, and I think, the other thing that's very clear is we need feet in the ground, and feet in the ground are what you and the guys do. But if we can get the information through good technology to be quicker, that should enable you to provide a quicker, sharper service.
We all need to do it. There's no point some people doing it and some people not for it to work. Through the supply chain, everybody needs to do it, So it's like, and then it just ends up bitty, You get some people using technology, some people lifting the phone in the same claim, like Jeremy said, you have to understand the policyholder, what way they want the claim sorted from the start, and then you go through that process again. But everybody has to stick together on the claim and do it the right way. But
you have to be prepared to do it in so many ways. Matthew, take a look at that. What role then in looking at future and trying to, look at controlling the cost and providing a better service, what role does technology play? How would you look at that from a procurement point of view, the role that technology can help, but still retaining a lot of the things that we've heard in the past about procurement would be a split between buying teams and claims teams. The claims teams want to make sure that people who are doing the buying understand what claims teams actually do. So there's a balance between what the technology can do and what the humans do, which is what Jeremy's talking. How do you factor that into the buying cycle?
So I think when you look at technology, and I'm being fortunate to work with quite a few different insurance companies and suppliers, I think that this digital technology is out there, what everybody's looking for, but people have invested and started in different areas. So you have some insurance companies now who are getting really close to having a good digital journey, some who have already happened, and, you know, particularly outside of the UK, where, you know, 50, 60% of their claims are now, you know, through a digital journey. And then you've got suppliers who, you know, have invested heavily in digital journey. I think the thing where I see the next phase going is how you join all this up so it's integrated. So, there's not four apps that, the customer has to go into, or there's not where it's a digital journey, then it stops being a digital journey and then it goes back to being a digital journey. I think, you know, it's that architectural view. And I think this has to personally come from, you know, from the insurance company to a degree, in terms of having that thinking for that claim.
I've seen some great stuff out there, Matt. You know, they're really, and Jeremy, and it is good. It's very forward thinking. You know, it's just trying to get everybody. It tends to kind of disappear. These insurance companies, people bring this stuff out, but over sort of just filters out. Nobody tends to use it. You know,
integration, Steve, has been the biggest challenge. And I think this year what we've seen is an ability for even, you know, big organisations like insurers, and let's not underestimate the challenges that organisations of these size face. They're huge. So we've seen them, hopefully they'll face the integration. What I'm going to do, because we've overrun our time as we have an interesting discussion, I'm going to invite the three of you back in February to review the main issue that we've discussed there, which is how we've progressed, how we integrate it. And the ironic thing, this is one of the great things that I hope that IOC brings. We've got strategy and the push for digital coming from a CEO. We've got somebody trying to come in and say, this is how the best way we can make sure we can control and purchase the services that insurer needs done to exercise the control. And never forget, we've got somebody goes out, knocks the door, and goes and sees what the effect is, what he's doing. And that's the great thing about ILC, is the ability to bring these three people together. Jeremy's got his hand, and as he's the main sponsor, I'm going to give him the last
words. So, Alan, really briefly, you've talked about digital journeys, you talked about transformation. I want to say this, okay? ILC has been a physical event-based business, okay? And I'm just saying that what you guys have done, in my opinion, has been phenomenal. You guys are still on a learning curve, right? But you've gone from a very traditional physical event business to a virtual business, right? And I think you're still learning the ways and doing stuff, but, you know, I'm going to put a question to you, Alan. A year ago, could you have seen yourself as podcast, you know, host, webinar host? Because honestly, I think what you guys have done, and you're not charging, you know, anyone. You've got people who are sponsoring, right? But you're not charging anyone. This is great, free stuff for the industry. And I've got to say, you know, one of the reasons why I love sponsoring you guys is your innovation and the brand awareness. But what you've done, I think, is phenomenal this year. And my hat goes off to you and your team, really. But I'd like you to answer that question.
I agree.
Of course, when I was younger, I'm probably old to it now, I would have liked to have been a Radio 1 DJ. to pass me by.
Nobody would have understood, yeah.
Could I see it? No. But I think the one thing that's consistent about what we've done at ILC, and this has been very since Chris and Stuart, they brought me in, particularly brought Nick and I into this, is we've always looked to be better tomorrow from what we learned today for the industry. We facilitate, we don't give opinions. privately in my own business. As you all know, opinions can come out far too often from me. But in this one, it's about giving the industry the chance to talk. And interestingly, I think the webinars and the podcast have brought out more information than perhaps presentations do. Now, of course, we're going to get back to physical conferences because, as Steve alluded to earlier, the networking opportunities as well in there are absolutely fantastic. But in the meantime, what we hope is that we've allowed all the people in the process and in the industry to keep communicating and bring up more common ideas. And the agreement over ideas on the 20-odd webinars that we held in the spring and summer and over the broadcast that we've done this week, the agreement is phenomenal. And what we hope is for people like Matthew and colleagues and people like him who have to buy services and look for it, to Steve, the front end, who has to go and see the holders, and Jeremy sitting back, not very relaxed, but strategizing for the future and trying to make sure they're in the right place to meet the challenges of the future that are going to threaten our businesses. It's very important. So I want to say thank you to all three of you. We will have you back in February to take this to the next stage. We are, of course, going to look at other processes which will involve the three of you. It's been a really interesting webinar. We have, of course, this afternoon got our webinar on tech in the process. So please listen to that. There's a lot of good stuff in that. This industry is good as the people in it. So I want to thank everybody for listening in today. Anybody that's got any ideas or thoughts at alan@iloveclaims.com, I'm more than happy to hear from them. And anybody that's interested, myself or Nick without a K, N-I-C at iloveclaims.com, you are the claims industry. You have performed phenomenally as an industry this year, much better than we would ever have given ourselves credit for. And actually, I'm sure that enough of you have reflected on the service that you, your businesses and colleagues have been able to provide this year. Just do the question back that Jeremy's just asked me for yourself, and I think do it. So have a good day, and hopefully we'll be with you this afternoon.